I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And the love story that starts today's show has reminded me of this song ever since I heard it.
Every honeybee filled with jealousy when they see you out with me. I don't blame them, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose.
When you passing by, flowers droop inside. And I know the reason why. You much sweeter, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose.
Eric and Rachel Mesner are a couple, and they have a bee farm in Raytown. They make raw honey and other products, but this is a food show, so we're focusing on the honey. Fall honey in particular, because it turns out honey is seasonal. So they've stepped away from the farm to come talk to us today, and I am really excited to introduce them. Eric Mesner, Rachel Mesner, hello.
Hey,
hello.
Good morning, Gina.
So I know that this is not about your personal story so much, but making honey as a couple does sound romantic to me. Can you tell me the story behind that?
Yeah, so sure, we got married in 2010, and we're becoming passionate about more sustainable kind of lifestyle. We started garden and chickens, and then keeping bees seemed like a natural outcropping of that, and just took over.
I had read a lot of books about urban homesteading, and some of the books that I read made it sound really romantic to keep bees. It turns out it's a lot more involved than keeping chickens.
they have stingers.
Yeah, they have stingers, and there's just a lot more maintenance for bees.
Like what?
Well, there's a lot of diseases and pests that you have to be on the lookout for.
I mean, everything that you've heard on the news is accurate about
colony collapse.
How it's becoming very difficult, yeah, to keep bees, and has been for a while now. And so that translates to the bee yard. Every day, it's harder than it was 30 years ago, they say.
Well, so what is a typical day like for professional beekeepers on a bee farm?
I mean, it's an agricultural enterprise, so it changes with the seasons, just like every other enterprise does. In the spring, it's about building up your colonies, making sure everybody's healthy, making sure that the genetics are good, and then you transition into making sure they have enough space to store all that honey as the nectar flow starts on. After that transition, then you're mostly managing pests and disease and getting ready for winter.
How much of it do the bees kind of take care of for themselves? How would you describe the division of labor between humans and bees when it comes to honey?
I would say bees do 99% of the work.
Yes.
I mean, the bees work so hard. From like their hygiene and keeping the hive clean to, I mean, they're collecting all that nectar. It's like millions of flights to get, just a little bit of honey, but
we're just making sure they have an ideal home. So it's the right size. It's in the right location. Like, you wouldn't want to put it underneath a bunch of shade trees. You also want to think about, like, when winter's coming, about, like, the wind. You want to put it in the right location for that. So we're just giving them an ideal experience so they can bring in the most honey and do the best.
And, I mean, making sure the genetics are good
is
important. Making sure that they've got enough space but not too much space. Mm-hmm. And balancing that is really, I think, part of the beekeeper's role.
What happens if they have too much space?
Too much space is a common kind of newbie beekeeper issue, because if they have not enough space, they will think that they've outgrown their area and they will swarm. So beekeepers will give them too much space, erring on the side of, well, I definitely don't want them to swarm. So too much space then makes it more difficult for them to guard all that space. And so you get small hive beetles becomes a bigger issue. Wax moth becomes a bigger issue. Basically, they just can't monitor all of that.
Have you ever been swarmed?
I have witnessed a swarm. It is miraculous,
miraculous. That's a surprising way to describe it.
Oh my gosh, I could spend a whole day talking to you about how awesome swarms are and the way that they work. But I mean, basically speaking, the hive makes a decision collectively, and all at once they just pour out of the hive and they fly in a big circle and then they attach to a tree and they have a legitimate democratic argument about where they're going to find their next find their next colony.
Yeah, they send scouts out as far as 10 miles to go and find the next location. And so all the scouts come back to where the swarm is, and they talk about how great it is. Like, it has all the resources, it's over here. And then they send out more and more scouts.
They do the marketing.
Yes,
it's
yes.
Amazing.
And then all the bees have to agree that this is the best spot, and then they all leave together once they all come to consensus.
This sounds a lot like campaigning and voting and stuff.
It is absolutely. I mean, there is a book written by Tom Seeley called Honeybee Democracy, and it talks about how they're, I mean, they're arguing amongst themselves. They go to their different, you know, they're looking for cavities in trees and so forth. They can measure the inside of that cavity, and then they come back and they dance to lobby for their location that they love. And other bees will headbutt them to try to argue and tell them, no, don't stop lobbying for your tree. I want them to go to my tree.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we are here today to talk about honey. No, I mean, you can't talk about honey without talking about bees.
That's
and
true.
This is fascinating. This is a food show. You make raw honey. People probably see that on labels, but what does that actually mean?
That means that it's not pasteurized. So a lot of times whenever you're buying honey at the store, they heat it up to an extreme temperature so that it doesn't crystallize, because some people will see crystallization as a sign that honey's gone bad, which is not true.
It is harder to work with.
It is, yeah. But you can just heat it up and it's just fine. So of honey that you buy at the store will be pasteurized.
And they also filter it heavily as well.
Yes,
and
yes.
So that filterization process, if you're interested in some of the like impurities, pollen, that sort of thing that ends up in raw honey, you're going to miss out on that with finely processed honey.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, what are some of the other differences between honeys? You brought in a few different ones, and we're going to talk about them. But first, just broadly speaking, how do honeys differ from one another? What's some of the language you use to talk about that?
Well, first, I should start by saying that honey just has to do with the location, like the different flavors. So if you are putting honey in like an avocado field, the honey is going to come in black because the nectar that the avocado flowers produce is like a black nectar.
Yeah, I mean, it's flower nectar specific. So
yes.
As different flowers bloom in different seasons and in different locations, that's going to dictate what kind of honey you end up getting.
Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be hung up on a detail here, but have you ever had avocado honey? I've never.
I haven't. I've seen it on Instagram and I want to try it real bad.
That sounds cool.
And then
black
the other
honey.
Cool thing is, even if you are keeping your bees in the same region all the time, it's going to differ year to year. So if we have a drought, that's going to affect the taste of the honey. If you have a really wet season, that's going to affect it too. So similar to how wine has like really great years, like, oh, you got to try that like 2011 wine or whatever. It's the same thing with the honey. Some honey just has a really great flavor that particular year. Because
absolutely. Yeah. Last year, we had a killer black locust bloom across the country, and all these beekeepers were sharing photos of their black locust honey because it just came in so well. Just the timing was right and the rains were right, and it made for a really delicious honey.
So mm-hmm. Is 2017 one of those years that beekeepers talk about? Like, we've got some 2017 honey.
I mean, it, you know, again, it varies across the country. So some beekeepers had a lot of success. And even locally, the microclimates have so much to do with how the honey does and how the bees do. Even this year, we had some beekeepers had banner years and other beekeepers were just feeding their bees all summer long. It's rough. Mm-hmm. But
well, you brought in 4 different honeys for me to try. And I tried them right before the show because I don't want people to have to listen to me tasting honey. but we have yet to discuss it. And I do want to say that these honeys are like, if you set them down in a row of glass jars, which is how they appear before me, they make this like really pretty just gradation of amber colors.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts with the spring honey, which is very light, like a pale yellow. And then this honey that came in later in the year, like in June, were you saying?
Yeah.
That one is more of like more ambery. And then the fall one is just almost brown.
Yes. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so this is indicative, as you said, of the seasons. And it's not a rule that spring honey is always light or that fall honey is always dark, but it's a generality that different things that are in bloom at different times, this is what ends up kind of you end up with.
So the spring honey, can I talk a little bit about the flavors? Okay. So the spring honey is really, really light, and it tastes floral. A lot of it is clover and tree nectar, which are the first things that bloom in this area in the spring. And this year we didn't have it quite as light as the years before because there wasn't quite as many black locust blooms, but that's still part of that honey that we harvest because we have a lot of black locust trees in our area, and they produce a lot of nectar for the bees.
It tasted very fruity to me. Like there was, maybe I'm just used to trying to describe wines, but it like apple-y.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love that description. Yes.
Yeah. And generally speaking, that lighter honey amongst honey judges tends to be sought after. And so it's more rare. It's more interesting flavored in a way. I think it's lighter, so it's a little bit more subtle than the darker honeys. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, in terms of flavor, if you were going to pair it with something, you would want to do something that really featured the honey rather than overpowered it or wiped it out.
Like if I'm going to be cooking, I'm not going to be cooking with our early season honey because once you start adding ingredients, it would easily be overpowered. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much subtlety in that honey that I would want that to come forward.
So then this next honey that gets just a little bit darker, this one tasted, I would say, like if the spring honey was like a high note that someone was singing, we've like gone down an octave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So this is most of the honey that we have at our store. And I would say if you're trying to compare it to something that you're used to, just calling it a wildflower honey is about where it falls. It tastes a little bit more complicated. I think it tastes a little bit nutty. And I would definitely be using this one if I was going to be cooking or baking and I wanted a honey flavor to come in because it's a really well-rounded sort of flavor.
You know, there is a kind of sweetness that's like a honey sweetness that is different from a sugary sweetness.
Yes.
And it's like a mellowness. And I feel that starting to come in with this one as opposed maybe to that spring honey, which has something closer to just pure sweetness to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it tastes darker. You can taste that flavor. It's almost like closer to molasses a little bit. And as it gets darker, it gets kind of woodier. It's not a dead set rule, but it definitely tends that way.
Yes.
And then this last one is the fall honey. So and it is fall now. So I really want to talk about the fall honey and what you love about it, what makes it the way it is. This is definitely the one that tastes the most complicated.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I think that this one tastes like the most, like what Eric was just saying, like woody. And it tastes like very dark.
It's honey-y honey.
Yeah.
And when I'm gonna, if I want to flavor a food that's really honey forward, like honey bacon something or other, or if I'm putting honey on my oatmeal, I'm gonna pick a darker honey generally because that's the honey's gonna come in on top of whatever it is that you.
It's like the difference between if you get an egg at the store and then you got chickens in your backyard and eat that egg. It just tastes more eggy. It's true. Like this tastes like honey and it's stronger. And yeah, I agree with Eric on that.
What makes the different seasons different from one another? I mean, I understand that it's something about the life cycle of a flower or something, but I'm not sure what it would be.
Yeah, it's just whatever's in bloom. And so, you know, we're really here today to talk about the different seasons and the colors are associated with different seasons. But really, I want to stress that it's about the flower. And so because we're in Kansas City and because we're kind of in the metro area, we cannot control what flowers the bees go to. But there are beekeepers that definitely, I mean, that's sort of their deal is to move bees into a certain area during a certain time period. And you can get like orange blossom honey. You can get buckwheat honey. The like pure clover honeys come from that same sort of idea. And so for us, you know, we really look at colors as grading through the seasons because we don't get to choose where the bees go. I mean, they just sort of are hitting whatever's within a 2 mile radius and in bloom. But this
and that's part of urban beekeeping.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We're tied to our region and just sort of whatever the bees are going to end up visiting. So
we were talking just a little bit before the show started, and I've learned that, Rachel, you're the one with more of a sweet tooth.
Yes.
And so I'm going to ask you, what are some of your favorite ways to eat honey or drink it. A lot of people like it in tea.
Oh, I love it in tea. I love it in mint tea. I feel like that those things go really well together. I want to taste the honey. So a lot of times I'm putting it on toast with some cinnamon, on biscuits. It's great on baked carrots.
Ooh.
Yes. So I tend to do things where I'm really tasting the honey. But I do have, like, I have this guy that regular, I wish I remembered his name, but he comes into our store every month and he buys a bunch of honey from us because he makes ribs with it. And I love it because he's brought us in a sample before and it really features the flavor of the honey when he makes the ribs.
Do you ever make baklava?
My mother-in-law does and she uses our honey and it's real good.
Well, we are going to be talking about Middle Eastern food soon, which is why I asked that. What do you think it is about baklava that really like makes honey shine the way it does?
I feel like having the nuts in there and the pastry, it brings a really good balance.
Also, doesn't it seem like there's just a lot of honey?
There is a lot of honey. It's so gooey.
So it makes it best.
Yes.
Yeah. Eric and Rachel Mesner with us from Mesner Bee Farm in Raytown. Thank you so much for stopping by to share your story.
Thanks, Gina.
Happy Friday. Thanks for having us.
And now our food critics will be joining us soon to tell us about the Middle Eastern restaurants that they love. But no matter where you get your hummus or shawarma or baklava, there is a really good chance that your pita bread comes from the Olive Cafe in South Kansas City. Intern Salisa Kalakal is going to take us there.
Just a few hundred feet away from the Olive Cafe restaurant is an unassuming, medium-sized warehouse. It's a cold and rainy morning outside that warehouse, but inside, it's getting really hot. That's because this concrete space is the Olive Cafe's bakery. Every single day, the strange-looking machines serve just one purpose, making pita bread. Salah Mansi is the guy in charge here, and he's been in this business for a long time.
I do this for 15 years. It's hard work, it's not easy work.
Starting at 5 in the morning, Mansi and a team of 6 people help bake 5 to 6,000 pieces of fresh pita bread every day. Over the course of 5 hours, the pita dough is mixed, shaped, and baked into their flat and round final forms. But for bread that requires the work of several machines and humans and takes about 3 hours to make, the ingredients are pretty simple.
High gluten flour is a good flour, the best flour we use. And we use yeast, water, salt, and sugar.
Once a batch of the dough is mixed, it's divided, shaped, and flattened. Then comes the main event, the oven. So, this oven. It looks nothing like your regular oven.
Like pizza ovens, but heavy-duty ovens, special for pita bread.
On one end, pale circles of dough are placed on a conveyor belt, which takes them inside the oven for a quick 55 seconds, and then pops out pieces of inflated pita bread on the other side. The oven doesn't just stand out because of its size. It's also hot. So hot, in fact, that the door is propped wide open to let in the cool morning air. Because with the cooking temperature rising above 500 degrees Fahrenheit, the room can feel a bit like a sauna.
In this oven, the bread stay 55 seconds. And then you have to keep it about 30 minutes to get cold. After get cold, we package it, we put it in the bags.
Once the pita bread is packaged, it doesn't just go to the Olive Cafe store and restaurant. Mansi and his son, who was working in the oven this morning, also deliver batches of this freshly baked bread to other Middle Eastern restaurants around the Kansas City area.
That's why I have to finish early to deliver it.
Mansi first learned the art of making pita bread in 2003 when he opened the Olive Cafe here in Kansas City. At the beginning, it involved a lot of trial and error.
Then I went to Chicago, and they could teach me how to make it, and then I started making it. And then I went to California, and a big company, Don Foods, and these people helped me.
Mansi says that when it comes to baking pita bread, it's all about the flour.
I'm telling you, the flour, high gluten, is essential for the pita bread.
And he should know, he's been doing this for a long time, and he's been eating pita bread for even longer.
I'm from Jerusalem, I moved here 35 years ago.
It's a bit hard for him to pin down some of his favorite Middle Eastern dishes, because, he says, there's just so many. But these are some of his standouts.
We have maklouba, We have mansaf, we have msakhan, we have kidra, we have all kinds.
And for him, when he eats Middle Eastern food, pita bread is a must.
Mediterranean people, overseas people, we eat pita bread every day. This is the number one bread we have overseas.
At 11 a.m., just as the Olive Cafe's buffet is about to open, the bakery oven is turned off and the bags of pita bread are loaded into vans for delivery. Mansi is ready to head out the door, deliver the pita bread around town, and do it all again tomorrow.
It's my job. I love this job.
That story from the Olive Cafe came to us from KCUR intern Salisa Kalakal. And now it's time for you to call in and tell us about the Middle Eastern dish that you love. Where do you find it here in town? 816-235-2888 is the number to call. 816-235-2888 or tweet us. We're at KCURCST. I'm Gina Kaufman. The Food Critics will be here in just a minute. Stay tuned to KCUR's Central Standard. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and the Food Critics are here to talk Middle Eastern food. They're going to take us to local restaurants where you can find shawarma, kebabs, tabbouleh, hummus, dolmas, and a whole lot more. You can tell us about your favorites, too. We'd also love to hear your personal stories about Middle Eastern foods from your own family or your travels. Can you find those things on local menus? And if not, maybe you can tell us your recipe. 816-235-2888. The Food Critics this morning are Charles Ferruza, Jill Silva, and Carlton Logan. Hi, everyone.
Hey. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Charles, how has the Middle Eastern food scene in Kansas City changed over the years?
Well, I think most diners know that Greek cuisine is not Middle Eastern. Maybe they don't know. I don't know. I used to work in a Greek restaurant for years. And people think that's what it is.
Jill, what would you say about that?
I think I'd agree with Charles that it is a little bit hard to define. And I think people kind of mix a lot of regions into it, which is okay. Carlton, do you have a definition for us?
It is a little challenging because some of the same flavors are there.
And they all serve hummus.
And they all serve hummus. And there are certain spices that are sort of common. Cardamom and just various spices that are sometimes common in the different cuisines.
Well, we're going to go ahead and dive into some of the specifics, and that'll maybe start ironing some of this out. Jill, you wanted to give a shout out to Chef Kamal for all he's done to give Middle Eastern cuisine a bigger presence in Kansas City. Tell me about him and his journey.
Well, Chef Kamal is used to be known as Yummy's Choice. So he's done a rebrand. I think it was back in the summer that I noticed it. For a while, his hummus and shata and lebna and all the different kind of spices and pestos and, you know, various little condiment kinds of things that he does
so
vanished from the shelves.
Let's back up, though, and tell people who he is.
Yes, well, so he is a chef about town who's had a hummus company, and that is just the broad umbrella of what he does. And he's
does he
also
still have a restaurant, Jill?
Well, he's had restaurants. I don't believe he has one right now. He also was a fixture at the Cosentino's downtown, and so you could go in at lunchtime and "Hello, my friend." Is his signature line. So just been on the scene for a long time, really, I think, introducing people to hummus and then getting them through that gateway into all of his different tapenades. And shata is kind of like a tapenade, if that makes sense. And then the lebna, which is like a cream cheese and feta cheese combination. So his products are back on the shelves, and his logo looks a lot neater and cleaner and easier to read. But he's still there. You know, you can identify Chef Kamal.
And you really feel like products. He has raised the profile of Middle Eastern food for Kansas City. Not think, just people going out to eat, but people cooking at home.
I think he's a tremendous ambassador and has really brought people along because he's so friendly, so welcoming. He's so visible. He does a lot of demos around town. So
he's very charming.
Very charming.
Well, we're going to get back to our critics and our callers shortly, but I do want to really quickly talk with a local author, Adib Karam. His novel for teens, Darius the Great Is Not Okay, is based loosely on his own experience growing up half Persian here in Kansas City. And a lot of the passages in that book are beautiful descriptions of food and tea. Last time we spoke, Adib talked about learning to make Persian food for himself when he was in college. And I thought maybe he would want to join us to talk about some favorite dishes. He's on the phone with us now. Hi, Adib.
Hi, Gina. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
There are some almond-filled pastries that figure really prominently in your book. Remind me what those are called and just talk to us about those a little.
Those are called kotab. I'm not very good at pronouncing it myself, and I think no one who didn't grow up speaking Farsi can say it that well. But they are made with a very basic dough that's like butter and flour and water, and you let it rest so it becomes stringy, or not stringy, springy, excuse me.
Springy.
And then you fill it with a mixture of ground almonds and sugar and cardamom, and then you bake them, or if you're feeling ambitious, you deep fry them, and then coat them in powdered sugar.
What do you love about these? I feel like I can just hear that list of ingredients and already love it, but what do you love about it?
I mean, I love the taste. I've always enjoyed the taste of almonds and cardamom, especially. They remind me a lot of home. And my aunts would often make them for celebrations, especially when I was growing up. They were always kind of associated with Persian holidays.
Is this a dessert that you would see on a restaurant menu or no?
Very rarely. I have occasionally seen them and occasionally seen them at like Persian grocery stores, but very rarely. They're very time consuming.
You're also sort of a tea fiend, as is your main character, Darius. Can you tell me about the role of tea in a Persian meal?
I would say, and granted, I can only speak from my own family and the families I've interacted with, but tea is just a staple in the household at all times. From when the first people get up and put the kettle on until everyone goes to bed and washes out the kettle to be used tomorrow, there's always tea on the stove. And when it gets too old, we'll dump it out and make a new pot. And it's at snack times, it's at breakfast. I usually don't see people having it during dinner, but it's more of an after dinner with desserts type treat.
What kind of tea would you recommend with, say, kebabs?
Ooh, with kebabs. I mean, I would want something. This is well outside the Persian wheelhouse, but I feel like if I'm having like a nice grilled meat, I would want something like lapsang souchong, which is a smoked tea from China. It has a lot of the notes that you find in barbecue or grilled food, and I think that would pair nicely.
So I asked you about kebabs because that's something that you were saying you would like to talk about in this conversation.
Yes. There's really nothing quite like the experience of getting kebabs fresh off the skewer with a heaping mountain of rice. For a long time, when I was growing up, there was a restaurant that was on like right off Ward Parkway called the Kebab House, appropriately enough. And it closed, and then for a while there was a restaurant on Metcalf called Caspian Bistro, and then it closed eventually. And now I recently found a place out in, it's like right on the border of Lenexa and Overland Park, called Casey Grill and Kebab, and I've been there a couple times and really like them.
Well,
so when you don't have a giant grill out back, it's nice to find a restaurant that does it justice.
Adib, thank you so much for joining us. And again, I mean, I would really recommend if you want to read some beautiful descriptions of Persian food, that is just one part of his book, Darius the Great Is Not Okay, but it's a big part. Adib, thank you.
Thank you.
And back to our critics. Critics, where do you like to get kebabs?
I would also get them at Casey Grill and Kebab on, pardon me, on 87th Street Parkway. There's actually, as I was doing research for this show, there were three different restaurants that I could find right in that stretch between I-35 and, say, 435. pretty good representation, and the Grill and Kebab is definitely specializing in the kebabs. So definitely worth trying out. They also have a buffet if you're feeling like you want to, you know, find some new foods to try.
Or overindulge in.
Or that, yes. But I think sometimes that helps people get beyond just kebabs, which I think are delicious, and certainly a standby. But then sometimes some of the salads and the soups and the side dishes get overlooked. And so that's maybe a way to try them.
Carlton, what about you? Where would you recommend kebabs?
I would recommend Jerusalem Cafe, which was my introduction to the kebab. One of the things I always talk to people about is a bridge dish. To me, that's the dish that bridges what you're familiar with what you're not familiar with when you're introduced to a new cuisine. So when I was first introduced to Mediterranean food, my eye was drawn to the chicken and shrimp kebab at Jerusalem Cafe because it had rice, which I grew up eating rice. So I thought, okay, this is kind of familiar. So, yeah, I do have a special place in my heart for the kebabs at Jerusalem Cafe.
Well, while we're talking about Jerusalem Cafe, let's talk to Anne, who has called us from North Kansas City at 816-235-2888. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I just wanted a second. The critic that was just talking about Jerusalem Cafe, it is amazing and my absolute favorite place to go. It's not a fancy restaurant, but oh my gosh, the selection. I grew up in Independence, had no experience with Greek food until I met my deceased husband. And on our first date, that's where he took me. And it just blew me away.
Do you have a favorite dish that you like to get at Jerusalem Cafe?
The stuffed grape leaves.
The stuffed grape leaves. You know, Anne, it's funny you should mention stuffed grape leaves because we have another caller who wants to talk about stuffed grape leaves. Nancy in Drexel, Missouri. Hello.
Hi. Yes, I would like to know where to get those. Also, what I've noticed is that in the store that we have in our town here, there was no eggplant. No eggplant all year long. We have not had any eggplant. And I think a lot of Mediterranean dishes have quinoa and couscous, eggplant, hazelnuts. I would like to find a place that has a dish, some kind of dish that would have all those things in it.
So, yeah, it is hard to make baba ganoush without eggplant. At least baba ganoush. That would be a hard one.
Yes.
Might be hard to make moussaka, too.
Yeah.
So let's start with this first piece of it. Are there any great stuffed grape leaf or dolma lovers on this panel?
Oh, I love dolmas, and either meatless or with meat, but they're kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Ubiquitous now. They're easy to find, and Casatina's Market of all places has some really great ones in their deli case that you can take home. And can you freeze them, Jill? I would think maybe.
Yeah, but I think they would freeze very well, actually.
And Jill, you are mentioning a couple of different places where you're saying they serve good dolmas.
Yeah, well, anywhere that has a great mezze platter. So, like, I usually, that's like the first thing that I want because I want a little taste of everything. So maybe dolmas, kibbeh, hummus. You have to have the hummus, right? That's a yardstick.
Yes.
Baba ganoush is also, for me, a really special. I need that as my yardstick as to whether I, you know, love the restaurant or not. So I get those plates and kind of eat my way through it. And that gives me a sense of what's going on at the restaurant.
What is typically your favorite thing on a mezze plate?
It just really depends. Like, you know, if the baba ganoush is really smoky, I just love that really, really smoky flavor from the eggplant.
So where do you find that in Kansas City? A really nice smoky baba ganoush.
Yeah. Well, a couple of places. I will say I had a very smoky version from Holy Land Cafe recently. And also Rumen, which is a newer restaurant. It's in the old Carlos Copa room, if people remember at Lackman in 87th, there was a restaurant there, Italian restaurant for a long time, and they've completely revamped the space. It used to be kind of dark, and now it's sort of a vacation to walk in there and see the white walls and the tiles. And it just has a really nice Mediterranean feel with arches and fountain and all of that. And the food is quite good.
Yeah. What else do you recommend there? Because I've seen your little write-up and it's just mouthwatering.
It really is. And I think what's great is that you can go ahead and go with something familiar. They have the shawarma, they have the kebabs, and they're great. But then you can also get into some different dishes. They have a lot of chicken, lamb, and beef dishes to try. And one that's really interesting that I've tried is it's a sausage, a Lebanese-style sausage, and it's pretty spicy. I believe the way it's pronounced is sajouk, perhaps. I don't know about my pronunciation there. But it's cooked in a clay pot, and it has a spiciness and a richness to it. So it's kind of fun to go off the I guess the numbered menu, you know, the things that you always know, and try something a little bit different. I've also had the lamb there, big shank, a lot of meat, just cooked in all kinds of savory spices, and it's delicious. So it's definitely worth a try.
Jill, do they have a good mezze plate?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's kind of where I started. And then I started asking the server, what else? What else?
What intrigues me is your description of a Palestinian fish dish. Can you talk about that?
I haven't actually eaten that one yet, but I like that there are a lot of different options on this menu. So it'll take you out of your comfort zone.
I want to find out. I'll wait and do it next.
We're going to continue this conversation in just a minute. You can call 816-235-2888 to join us. We're talking about Middle Eastern food in Kansas City. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we'll be getting to a lot more of your calls and more of our critics' recommendations in just a minute. Jill Silva, Charles Ferruza, Carlton Logan, welcome back.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm Gina Kaufman here with the food critics on KCUR's Central Standard, and we are talking about Middle Eastern food on local menus. You can call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. I'm going to get right back to some of these callers, but first, Jill, I do want you to tell me about this elaborate dinner for four that people can share at Holy Land Cafe.
It's actually pretty straightforward. It's various kebabs, rice, hummus, baba ganoush, and it's just a steal. Got tons of food, had rice and meat left for days for $50 or $49.95. So just a good budget meal. You know, if you're thinking about fast food, you would spend that much. And so I would say,
for
you know,
people, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is a really great meal deal.
Carlton, tell us about Pita Blue. There's something you like to get there.
Pita Blue, I usually get the beef and lamb kebab. And I get it because it's sort of like the gyro. It's the beef and the lamb, and it's in a pita. And, you know, we like something that we can carry and hold in our hand. So it's the beef and the lamb. It's got a wonderful sauce. It's got the onions, so you have bad breath afterwards. And I usually get the seasoned fries, so it's great taste.
Carlton, is it in that tzatziki sauce? Like a...
Yeah, kind of a... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about Pita Blue is that you can get it while you're still in your car if you're in a hurry. It's a drive-thru.
It's a drive-thru.
Where is it located?
It's at 119th and Metcalf, next to Unforked.
Let's talk to Molly, who's calling us from Kansas City. Hi, Molly.
Hi.
What do you want to share?
Well, you guys are all talking about restaurants, and I just wanted to mention another local hummus in Kansas City. It's Mo's World's Greatest, and they have a great smoky baba ganoush. They have tzatziki and spicy tzatziki and all flavors of hummus, and it's been made here for 20 years and just a great staple of the Kansas City Mediterranean scene.
What do you like about those dips, if I can call them
dips? I like that they're unusual flavors. It's not something that everyone has, and I mean, I love that they're local.
Thanks, Molly.
Thank you.
And now we're going to talk to Manny. Manny is calling us from Overland Park. Manny, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
What do you want to share?
So I just wanted to share that there are a lot of Mediterranean restaurants that have come and gone in Kansas City. And some of the ones that have stuck around have really kind of tailored their food to be more towards an American palate, just so that they can, you know, sort of immerse in the local scene some. But places like KC Kebab, the Aladdin Cafe, and then a new restaurant called Ruman, which is also on 87th Street, are a lot more authentic. So if anybody's looking for food that's closer to what traditional Middle Eastern families would cook at home, those are the three restaurants your time at.
We've heard a little bit about Ruman and about KC Kebab. We have not heard about Aladdin. Will you tell us what it is that you find at Aladdin that makes you feel that it's more authentic than some of the other places in town?
Sure. So Aladdin, I'm not sure the exact address, but it's closer to downtown Westport area. It's not very well known, but it's extremely authentic just from, you know, spending time with Middle Eastern friends at their homes. That's the kind of food that they cook at home. That's the normal stuff that they would eat. They have a really fantastic lentil soup, which, I mean, I've eaten more of that there than anything else on their menu.
Well, cool. Thank you for calling in and giving a shout out to a few different places, but for describing Aladdin.
Sure, no problem.
And we'll get right back to our critics, but I want to bring Eric and Lawrence in on this conversation. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Where are you going to tell us about?
I am a big fan of good food in gas stations. So I'm going to plug the Cenex gas station on 23rd Street in Lawrence. And they have the best falafel I've ever had in my life.
What's good about it, other than being in a gas station?
It has really nice texture. It has one side of the falafel has sesame seeds encrusted on it. And, you know, just everything is just really good there. And it's really affordable. Like, I think six falafels are $2.99 or something like that.
Wow.
Well, and you can get... you can get your traditional gyros, but you can get anything you want in a bowl with, like, rice, and they have harissa, and you get three toppings to put on your bowl.
So, Eric, tell us the name of this gas station again.
Cenex, CENEX.
All right,
in Lawrence, Kansas,
on 23rd Street. Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's just down the road from the grocery store there.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Eric. Okay, I know I said we were just going to take this one more call, but we're going to still take one more call. I'm going to go to Sama in Overland Park. Hi, Sama.
Hi.
What do you want to share?
I want to share Yaya's. I like their baba ganoush because it's really, really good. And their pasta, it's delicious.
And so, you sound like perhaps a young caller.
Mm-hmm.
And you like Yaya's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a vote for Yaya's from Sama in Overland Park. Anyone want to say anything about Yaya's?
I need to go back there. I like that place.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while for
me. Okay, so, but we did just hear from Eric about a gas station that serves. He says great falafel in Lawrence. Carlton and Jill, you are both recommending Papu's Cafe.
So for years I've heard about Papu's, and we all know the legend of Oklahoma Joe's in the gas station, barbecue in the gas station. So I'd heard about Papu's, and I recently started working in close proximity. And just this week, I went to Papu's for the first time and had a really good chicken shawarma. It was very good. And again, it is kind of odd going into a gas station where you normally buy your gas and buy some little chips or whatever, but it's a very clean process. You go in, you order, you pay for it at the counter where you normally pay for your gas, but it's good Mediterranean food. I had the falafel as well. Very good.
So the falafel and the chicken shawarma earn high marks for you.
And the hummus.
Jill, what do you like there?
The tabbouleh, the salad that's parsley-based with tomatoes. It's very fresh. It's excellent. Also, the setting I will say is a little bit, there's an expanded area outside. So if you don't want to eat inside of a gas station, they have some cute little terrace areas where they've got some growing plants and a few patio chairs. So, you know, it gives you the best of both worlds, assuming it's not raining out like today.
So, Carlton, you have a wish list. Can you explain that to me?
Well, you always have to have a wish list of the places that you want to go that you haven't gone to yet. So Tribe Street Kitchen is on my list there in River Market. They have a za'atar salmon salad and salmon skewers. Jay Wilson's in Lawrence has shakshuka, which I recently found out is a egg dish that has a tomato-based sauce that has those wonderful kind of Moroccan flavors in it. And then there's another place here locally.
Wait, you...
go ahead.
I need you to explain the other ingredients in this, because when I read this description, yes. I mean, I need to eat this.
Yes. So, Jay Wilson's, they have the shakshuka, which, from what I understand, is normally just the eggs and the sauce. But Jay Wilson's has it with a merguez lamb sausage and baby kale and served with challah bread.
Okay, that sounds really good.
It sounds really good.
Charles, is there a Middle Eastern restaurant or dish that we have not talked about yet that you just love?
Well, you know, I think of Middle Eastern food as being really the ultimate comfort food, because if you're feeling bad or low or depressed or melancholy, it's a really good, happy kind of food. Mm. It's comforting to eat. I mean, the sauces are smooth,
mm-hmm.
or the dips, and the cheese is nice and salty, and there's
warming spices too, which
yes,
yeah,
the spices.
It's a nice comfort food to have. By the way, the shawarma restaurant, mm-hmm. is that the former Popeyes on Linwood?
Yes.
I thought that was a nice cultural mm-hmm. shift.
Yes.
You know, Jill, you have given us a road trip destination to think about for Middle Eastern food.
Yeah, I was in Wichita recently, and Chef Carmen Cabilla, who actually is a food truck chef here for El Tenedor, suggested that I go to Bella Luna, and it's delicious. They have a wonderful mezze platter there, and I also tried the kebabs. Very upscale kebabs. You know, we had sauces going on with it, a mushroom portobello sauce, and kind of, I thought, had French influences. So I think that would make sense. I understand the family is Lebanese, so you would see influences there. But very upscale to street food, too. I've had their shawarma, delicious. So it's definitely worth a look if you're down in the Wichita area.
What about Habashi House? You're recommending Habashi House in the City Market.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, again, another long-time standby owned by a long-time family operation, you know. And so it's what's so great about that, I think, is it feels like you're going into the marketplace. Maybe you've traveled somewhere and you stand in line. There's usually a long line. And once you give your order, you actually see people cooking it and running around doing things. And then there's a nice little seating area, and you can just sit down. It's modest, but somehow, again, it feels like
they have that rice with almonds in it.
Rice with almonds is delicious. And they have some tea that's free that you can have with your lunch or your dinner. And
tea and falafel, great combo.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and I'm wondering if there are just is. Before we go, Jill, can you tell us, we talked about baklava earlier, there is an ice cream on one of these menus that you're highlighting for us.
Yeah, I have not had it yet, but I have had some that have rose water, and that I believe the one that you're speaking of is at Casey Grill and Kebab, and they have pistachio and rose water. And that's just a combination that's just...
It's a great palate cleanser.
It's a wonderful palate cleanser, and so unusual. You know, it's just not in the American flavor profile. So
Well, we had to end with dessert. Our time is up. Jill Silva is a freelance food writer who co-hosts a podcast about food called Chew Diligence. Jill, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Gina.
And Charles Frusa is our longtime critic on KCUR Central Standard. Charles, it's been fun.
Thank you.
Carlton Logan of KC Food Guys and Kansas City Eats, a Facebook group, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
KCUR's list of the best Middle Eastern dishes on Kansas City menus will be online later today, kcur.org. You can get all of the week's shows at kcur.org/centralstandard. The Weekend is here, so talk to us on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. This show is produced by Melody Rowell, Kathleen Pointer, Coy Duggar, Suzanne Hogan, and intern Sophia Gillespie. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman.